Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview.
Whoa, what's Doug McBurney's show doing on Bob and Yurt Live? Well, I guess it's too late to stop it, so let's listen in.
That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back. It is the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. Well, maybe one sponsor. Maybe we could have one sponsor. No? Maybe one. No. The Weekly Worldview brought to you by God, maker of heaven and earth and other fine products. Just, that would be the only sponsor. You had some difficulty bringing the program to market. Sponsors are somewhat skittish, apparently, to be involved with such a controversial podcast, but we haven't actually looked for sponsors because we're too busy working the family farm. Brought 3 dozen eggs to market this week. It's our biggest week ever. Now, we don't want to threaten to upset the egg market in general across the country, so we're starting small, admittedly. But we have a few customers now who are waiting for their eggs, and we had one customer today prepay for future eggs. Egg futures she bought, I think. We had a customer purchase egg futures, yes. Now, we can't guarantee that the price will remain but where it is, what with the popularity of the eggs exploding. But actually, she locked in. That's the secret of the future. See, she locked in today's rate. So to avoid future volatility is what it was. And we're very happy. We now have a barn, and we have chickens producing marketable eggs. Now, what the goats are for, I still do not know. The goats are not serving any legitimate farming function. Maybe we could hook them up to a farm implement and have them plowing the fields or something, do some work around here. Right now, they're just... They almost qualify as pets, but we don't want to say that. They're livestock. That's right. We will be getting milk from one of those goats, maybe next season. As the family farm continues to expand, and so we're not looking for sponsorship here at the Weekly Worldview. We're hoping that the farm income will subsidize the podcast, you see. That way we won't need any sponsors. Hey, I did the math. Now, 3 dozen eggs that we sold today, that was $9. Now, if we were to...
We usually get only two dozen.
$2 a dozen?
No, 2 dozens.
Well, yeah, but let's just...
Last week, we didn't...
But we're getting about $3 a dozen, right? So let's see. Let's just say that we need $9,000 a month to subsidize the lavish McBurney lifestyle and compound here, and the podcast, of course. So we got $9 this week. So that means if we can get 3,000 eggs a month to market. Let's see now. We got 5 layers. Is that right?
How come you're talking about chickens?
Well, because I'm trying to figure out exactly how we can make this work.
It's not.
So we'll just go to the news of the day. Anyway, if someone could do the math on that, I just need to find out how many chickens do we need housing for in order to... All right, I suppose we'll move on. Because it was a tumultuous week. The reason I wanted to talk about chickens is because I don't want to talk about the news. I mean, what a tumultuous week it was, right? I mean, we started out the beginning of the week. We had terrorist bombings in New York and New Jersey. And then we had terror stabbings at the mall in Minnesota. And then there were the police shootings in Tulsa, and Charlotte, and then the riots in Charlotte night after night of the endless CNN just waiting for someone to be shot live on TV. The riots, 4 nights now they've had riots and or protests in Charlotte. And by the end of the week, it was back to the terror at the mall. A shooter goes on a rampage in a mall out in Washington State. So I have to ask, is this the new normal? Is this where we are now? Is this where our civilization has evolved now? I just wonder aloud. And at what point does the chaos and the bloodshed and the madness, at what point does that cause people to stop and say, wait a minute, maybe we need to reconsider some of our priorities? And one of our priorities should be to find a political leader whom we can trust and endorse. I have not found, well, I suppose I've endorsed Tom Hoefling over at America's Party there. But I endorse him knowing full well that in order for him to win, there would have to be some sort of catastrophic event in which all of the other candidates were suddenly eliminated from qualification. So we'll endorse Tom, and, well, we don't wish ill on anyone. We don't want anything bad to happen. What would be nice is if we found out all the other candidates were born in Canada or the Virgin Islands or Kenya, something like that. If they were all suddenly disqualified and Tom turned out to be the only guy on the ballot, that would be good. Because, well, one of the largest edifices ever created in political history crumbled this past week. That was the edifice of Ted Cruz as a real rock-ribbed conservative. That edifice crumbled. Yes, I have, right from Ted Cruz's Facebook page, his endorsements of Mr. Donald Trump for president. Ted starts out this way on Facebook. Are you ready for this? Hold on to your hats. This election is unlike any other in our nation's history. At which point everybody would have to say, wait a minute, I've been hearing that since I was in seventh grade. Is that really true, Mr. Cruz, that this...
I thought you were George W.
Was that sounded more like George W. Bush? Well, the thing is, I never heard of Ted Cruz, and I never really studied him. So it's hard for me. I know he's got the nasal Texas thing going. It's kind of hard to... Let me... After many months of careful consideration, of prayer, and searching my own conscience, I have decided that on Election Day, I will vote for the Republican nominee, Donald Trump. And I encourage you to vote for him, said Ted Cruz. So that's what he said on his Facebook page. So not only did, here's the thing, not only did Ted Cruz say that he was going to vote for Donald Trump, but he encouraged others to vote for him. And therein lies the crumbling of the edifice, because it's one thing for you to give in to your fleshly desires and vote for someone who is so obviously wicked, so obviously corrupt, so obviously a liar and a charlatan and a megalomaniac. But to encourage others to do so, well, that's downright, well, it's dishonorable is what it is. It's dishonorable for Ted to do that. To all of the, well, let's just go on. He said, now, notice after many, many months of careful prayer, he had to pray a lot, you see. Ted wants us all to know that he didn't just pray once, maybe at dinner one night, just mentioning Donald Trump. But he went and petitioned the Lord night after night after night, and after many months of ardent prayer and petitioning to the Lord finally revealed to Ted that not only should he vote for Trump, but that he should encourage others to do so. That's what Ted is implying here. The mentioning of the prayer, also rather dishonorable. And then Ted goes into his six keys. There are six keys that inform my decision. First and most important is the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's first and most important. Wait a second. I've been hearing that since I was in seventh grade. Is that... do you really expect me to buy this, Mr. Cruz? Oh, I get it. It's a job application. how could I have missed that? Here's Ted angling for a Supreme Court appointment, and no doubt Donald J. Trump will be forthcoming with said appointment. If Ted will drop any semblance of conservatism and hit the trail for Donald Trump. Can you see that? Ted Cruz standing alongside that dim-witted Eric and Ivanka, right? Can you see that on stage? Ivanka and Eric introduce Ted Cruz as he comes out, gives a stump speech for Trump. I think that's what he'll have to do to get that Supreme Court nomination. Anyway, he goes through his list of six keys. The Supreme Court will be critical. Critical, I said. Isn't that just like a lawyer, right? To rationalize in order to justify what is obviously dubious, at least, and downright dishonorable at worst? That's just like a lawyer. Give you a list of six things. And remind you that I prayed a lot. I was on bended knee. All right. So Ted Cruz has disappointed the millions and millions of gullible evangelicals and Glenn Beck that he bamboozled during the election. This actually caused a rift between me and some good friends of mine. The fact that I would not that I wouldn't endorse Ted Cruz, but that I called them gullible for believing Ted Cruz. And, hey, I'm as gullible as the next guy. We all become gullible at times. Sometimes you just have to admit it and move on. Ted Cruz is nothing more than a typical Republican politician positioning himself for a future in Republican politics, of which there shall be a future if he goes ahead and hits the trail with Ivanka. That'll be something to see. That'll be almost as interesting as if... Now, what was the deal? Hillary Clinton had threatened to put somebody in the front row at the debates. I can't remember who it is now. Did you happen to read that story? He asked his crack staff, research staff. No. She was going to put somebody in the front row in order to embarrass Donald Trump. And Donald then whipped out a list of like five women that Bill Clinton assaulted. And he said, if you invite that person, I'll invite all of these. Anyway, three of them already said, we want to be there, Don. Give us front row tickets. Let's see, who was it? I can't remember their names, the women that Bill Clinton abused. Their names escape me at the moment. But only seeing that would top watching Ted Cruz out shilling behind Eric Trump. That would be hilarious. And appropriate, thank you very much. Yes. Now, speaking of the debate, which I guess we're going to have to speak of it, because it is set to be the most watched presidential debate since Nixon-Kennedy, as far as percentage of the electorate. It's going to be huge. Just ask Donald Trump's people. If there's one thing Donald Trump can do, it's bring home the ratings, and he is going to do that. And I might even watch, just for the sheer entertainment value. But on to news about at least the participants in the debate. We go to the New York Post, where an ABC affiliate reporter, Sarina Fazina, she actually had the nerve to say this to Hillary Clinton. Mrs. Clinton... Some doctors have said, because of your age, as well as your opponent's age, that you could be at higher risk for dementia or even Alzheimer's, and have suggested that you take some neurocognitive test. Would you be willing to do that, Mrs. Clinton? Now, I'm surprised that she wasn't assassinated after that interview, but apparently Sarina Fazina is still among us. She got away with it. But Hillary Clinton replied, I'm very sorry I got pneumonia, okay? And now Sarina Fazina did not follow up and say, that doesn't answer my question. She let Clinton go on and on about how I took antibiotics and took care of it, and it's behind us now. What difference does it make? at this point if it's Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or pneumonia. It's time to move on. But Sarina Fazina came back and asked specifically, yes, Mrs. Clinton, but would you submit to the testing? Please don't hurt me, please. Would you submit to the test, a neurocognitive test? And Hillary replied, there's no need for that. These are not the droids you're looking for, Sarina Fazina. The information I've released about my health is very clear. Got it, sweetheart? The information, says Hillary Clinton, is very clear. But Mrs. Clinton, that's what we'd like to find out. Is the information very clear to you, Mrs. Clinton? It's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney, on the eve of the big debate. Yes. And I've been in my mind, I've been imagining what it must be like behind the scenes at Donald Trump headquarters. Debate prep at Donald Trump headquarters in preparation for Hillary Clinton as he circles with his inner circle to prepare for the debate. And you know it's got to be coming up. How do we prepare for what could happen, Don, in the debate with Hillary Clinton? Don, we got to think about this, okay? This is going to be an important debate for us. This could make or break the entire election. Everything hinges on this first debate. Donald, we have to be prepared. All right. Let's get prepared. Okay. What if she coughs? What are we going to do if she coughs? Okay. Is it like a long extended cough? Is it a hard clearing of the throat? I need to know how to react. Let's say she just, it's a spastic cough. It's uncontrollable spasms of coughing with phlegm flying across the stage. I think you want to offer her water. I think so, right? I mean, you want to appear courteous, Don. That's the thing. You want to appear courteous, but not chauvinistic, right? Okay, it's a fine line to walk. So if the spittle and the phlegm are flying, I think you don't want to bring the water over to her. But you do want to hold out the glass in her direction, letting America know that you want to help, that you would like to offer her water. But of course, her handlers would be on the stage at that point, possibly giving her the water. And so I think we're prepared for the cough, right? What's going to be the head nod, the body motion towards her, holding out the glass will be the thing. Okay, that's now. What if she swoons? If she's holding on to the lectern and it looks obviously like she could fall over at any moment. Okay, should I run over and catch her? I think that's too aggressive, Don. I don't think you want to run over and catch her. If she swoons, I think you want to make the move toward her, again with the head nod, turn the shoulders, but I think you want to keep your distance here. Okay, again, we want to appear to be courteous and we want to be empathetic, but of course we don't want to appear chauvinistic in any way or that you're trying to show her up in the fact that you're able to run over there while she is swooning and dizzy. So I think, again, the feint, maybe reach out with the right arm to let America know that you would like to help. All right, and now, okay, let's say she keels over, straight up, a header right into the stage. She flat out keels over. Well, I think I should run over there, and I think I should pick her up. Run over there and pick her up? I'm not sure, Don. That may be a little bit aggressive. You'd be invading her space, and she might legitimately need medical attention. I mean, there could be a lawsuit there. I mean, you don't want to get... I think that you want to go to a neutral corner. I think you would want to leave the stage at that point. Don't take advantage of the fact that you're able to remain upright while she is lying splayed out upon the stage. I think that's the way to handle that if she is to actually keel over, Don, okay? We're going to go to a neutral corner. It's like a prize fight, Don. Yes. You don't want to gloat, you know? You don't want to do the Muhammad Ali with the fist in the air. No. We're gonna slowly, gradually step back out of the spotlight and allow the medical professionals to do their business. All right, so we got that. Now, what if she dies? Okay, fellas, what are we going to do if she flat out dies? I think the best strategy is not to mention it and to just continue with our talking points during the debate so as not to appear to be trying to upstage her with the fact that you are still alive and she has unfortunately passed from the scene. We may want to work in something about what a wonderful human being she was and how much she cared about women and children. So, again, we can appear empathetic, you know, but not be chauvinistic in any way. All right. Now, are there any other points we need to cover for the debate? No, I believe that. I believe that we've got all of our bases covered. All right. All right. Go get him, Don. Break a leg. Knock him dead.
Hey, this is Bob Enyar interrupting Doug McBurney's show. Let me just remind people, when we criticize Hillary Clinton, this is an archive show of Doug's The Weekly Worldview from September. When we do that, that doesn't mean that we're endorsing Donald Trump. There's plenty of criticism to go around. Donald Trump is a socialist, homosexualized, child killer, and there's a lot more we could say about him, and we do. But so anyway, just to remember, criticizing Hillary does not mean support for Donald Trump. Now let's rejoin Doug.
All right, we're back here at the Weekly Worldview. That was coverage behind the scenes at the debate prep at Trump Tower. Exclusive live feed fed to us. So there we have it. Otherwise, I think that if Trump overthinks this and tries to actually prepare, I think the only preparation he needs is to get a good night's sleep, and that's all. And Hillary, I think she needs like 3 weeks of sleep and a perfectly titrated dose of Xanax and amphetamines to try to get her through it. And I'm sure she's got some of the finest doctors in the world working on that so that she will remain upright through the debate and somewhat cognizant as she's able to be, as if it makes any difference at this point. Yes, this will be the first debate. This will be the first debate where the network is required to have a crash cart on scene. Yeah, those aren't cheap. That's an expense that the network had not anticipated, but for which they will take responsibility and make sure that they have the crash cart with the defibrillator and the IV. The trach tube, the whole thing. Nothing left to chance when Hillary Clinton hits the stage. All right. Now, let's go on in deeper. That was from the politics file, as you can well imagine. We'll move even deeper now into the politics file as we move to a story that when it first appeared on Drudge, it was in the giant red letters that Drudge uses when he expects a story to be earth-shattering. And the story is, as reported in Politico, that Barack Obama, the President of the United States, while he was president on June 28, 2012, used a pseudonym in email communications with then-Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, a pseudonym, if you matriculated in the government schools, a pseudonym is a name that's not your own. It's something you make up. It might be like your name or like something that's associated to you, but it's not your actual name because you're trying to conceal your identity. Or if you're an author, you might make up a name like Mark Twain or something like that. A pseudonym, okay? For all of our publicly educated listeners out there, I want to help you out. Don't go running to Google. I can help you with definitions of relatively simple grammatical terms. So Barack Obama uses a pseudonym in communication with Hillary Clinton on her homebrew server, on her unsecured private server. This disclosure has been revealed, or was revealed, when the FBI released documents from its investigation into Clinton's alleged criminal activity. Now, Politico does not say that the FBI was investigating any alleged criminal activity. I had to insert that because what Politico says is that the FBI was investigating Clinton's private email server. And as my friend and pastor, Bob Enyart, and the host of Bob Enyart Live, pointed out so skillfully, that this is a very well-played political ploy by the Clintons and the compliant press to cover up the fact that what everyone is investigating is actually alleged criminal activity by making sure that they always use the term private email server, where with any other human being on the planet, reporters and press outlets would report that the FBI was investigating alleged criminal activity. But for Hillary, no, we don't ever mention the possibility that it might have been criminal activity. It was just it was a server, you see. A server is what it was. Like the millennials will never catch that one. It was a server, you see. I think at Chipotle, something like that. So anyway, just a very insidious marriage between left-wing politicians and left-wing reporters. And it has now matured to the point where the reporters and the politicians no longer make any bones about the fact that they're colluding together to deceive and to dissemble in order to get any, whatever said left-wing politician we might be talking about. In this case, it's Hillary Clinton, but they want to work to get her elected. And there's no longer even the facade of impartiality even attempted anymore, because everybody knows what's going on and nobody seems to mind anymore. And hence this story, which should be, well, bigger than Watergate. This is bigger than Watergate. The president lied about, so, well, I found out that Hillary had a, what was that? She had a private server. Oh, a non-state.gov email. You're kidding me. I heard about that. I think the first time was from CBS News Reports is how I heard about that. And I was somewhat concerned about it. I found out through news reports. Well, on June 28, 2012, he emailed her under a pseudonym at that address, for crying out loud. But nobody seems to care. Drudge's giant red headline has now faded to a little footnote, because no longer is there any even an attempt to hide the fact that the left-wing media is not impartial in any way. They're in the bag for Hillary Clinton or whatever pro-abort socialist homo politician that they want to see get elected. And, well, I guess I'm just stating the obvious, and I apologize for that. It's just that it bothers me still. I'm one of the few people, I think, who's still bothered by this.
Okay, this is Bob Enyart again, interrupting Doug McBurney's show, The Weekly Worldview. You can catch the rest of his program on his website, theweeklyworldview.com. This show is called The Tumultuous and the Dubious. Doug joins me in studio every Monday for, what, 15 years. It's been fabulous, and he has his own podcast weekly. So, hey, God bless you guys.